Passion, unlike Evagrius, believes that tristitia, sadness or gloominess, as I've translated it here, is not the first vice of the thumakon, the part of the self that is responsible for being strong and valiant and a bulwark against temptation, the part of the self that is capable of this great energy of zeal, as we'll see when we consider the vice of acidia. Instead, for Cassian, this particular temptation towards tristitia is the second, and it comes primarily after the first, which is anger. Whereas Evagrius was primarily concerned with the sadness that comes from disappointed desire, for Cassian, very often this gloominess arises as a result of anger. And we'll see this as a kind of a sub-theme that runs throughout his texts, and particularly the text on anger and the related texts on friendship. One has a sense that Cassian is much more aware than Evagrius, which makes sense, since Evagrius was living as a hermit, and Cassian within the context of a cenobium, of a community, and writing for both communities and for hermits. Cassian is very much aware of the extent to which in community anger can be evoked constantly. The real question for him, as we'll see, of friendship is a question of avoiding anger. And so for him, the sadness that results is very often the sadness that comes from having been other than tolerant and gentle with those with whom you live. It's the sadness that comes about as a result of having been overly agitated. So he gives in chapter 1 a description of the various kinds of causes, and among these are the central fact that the problem with this gloominess and negativity is that it keeps us from divine contemplation. It ruins us, it destroys that which is given to us by a state of purity, it keeps us from seeing God. Remember that insight that we looked at in terms of the word for shame, that it's as if you're brought to silence, you feel you can't speak to the one who has saved you. Well, that's part of what this gloominess is about as well. He talks about the fact that its effect, and perhaps also one of its causes, is that it causes a person to become rough and impatient with the other brethren. So there is a strong sense in which one of the causes and the effects of sadness is found in the community, having to do with not bearing with one another. In number 3, he talks about the fact that the thing to bear in mind is the soul's true nature. He gives the example of a garment that's been moth-eaten, but he reminds us of the fact that we are to be a priestly garment containing the ointment of the Holy Spirit. We're supposed to be ornamented as a spiritual temple. These are the realities which gloominess keeps us from seeing. We have a glory. We are a kind of a glorious spiritual garment which spiritual despondency is making invisible to us. Not only are we feeling unworthy to speak to communicate with, or to perceive the Lord of life himself, we're also not seeing the truth of our souls. So it's important to bear in mind the soul's true glorious nature and the false appearance that it acquires as a result of this vice. He emphasizes in chapter 4 that the in chapters 5 through 8 that although the sources of gloominess or of despondency are to be found either in previous anger or a desire for something that you haven't realized or may not have any apparent cause at all, it's important to bear in mind, and he emphasizes this throughout chapters 5 through 8, that the other is not the problem. We will be tempted to project. We will be tempted to attribute our faults to others, to claim that everything else is the fault of those with whom we live or those who have done things to us. And Cassian is very concerned to remind us that we can't do this. This is not good for our souls. We have to recognize where the disturbance arises within us. Take responsibility for our own gloom, acknowledging that there may be factors that contribute to it, but recognize that the solution to it is not simply in identifying others as the problem, because really, they're not the problem. Then in chapter 9, and the chapters that follow, he identifies and highlights both a death-dealing, a destructive form of sorrow and gloominess, and the life-giving kind. There's a destructive kind which leads to death, a kind of a gloominess that simply doesn't result in any change, but simply causes a despair that turns away from things that are life-giving. That he mentions in chapter 9. And in chapter 10, he basically says that the only goal, the only good thing about tristitia, about despondency or sorrow, the only thing that can be useful about it is when it brings us to penitence, or is inflamed with a desire for perfection, or helps us yearn even more strongly for the contemplation, for the vision that we may not experiencing during the episode of or experience of gloom. So this is the only positive value, and it represents a kind of a potential for a positive use for it. It can be, if it's a holy sorrow and a positive sorrow, an opportunity to clearly see the things that we need to clear away in our lives, to let go of, to get rid of, and it can also cause us to yearn even more ardently for the things that may not be possible for us at that moment, for the contemplation which for some reason has become rather obscured to us. This is very important as a modern insight in the whole area of 12-step spirituality as well. It's not a question of sorrow or being gloomy or experiencing pity about oneself. Those are negative things, but there does need to be clarity in regard to that which has to change. And the events that allow us to recognize what must change will then have served a useful purpose. And that, for Evagrius, is the real useful purpose, and in many ways, the only value of what he calls wholesome sorrow, a life-giving or a salvific kind of holy sadness or despondency. And the means by which, in chapter 13, he says this is to be rooted out of our hearts, well, if one of the negative effects of despondency is that it keeps us from seeing God as clearly as we might, then our very yearning for heaven, keeping our mind occupied with the hope of the future and contemplation of the promised blessedness, in other words, looking towards heaven, towards the goal for which we're destined from all eternity, not simply looking at the superficial realities around us, but seeing beyond them that of which they are all but the symbol, but the hint and the foretaste. This is a way of stepping away from a gloom that casts our eyes down on negative realities. We can instead be aware of the deeper glory that lies beneath the surface. Just as he said at the beginning of the conference, that we have to be aware of the soul's deeper nature, we have to, chapter 13 implies, be aware of the soul's ultimate and glorious destiny. This, for us, can be a way out of the experience of gloom and despondency and depression. Evagrius mentions in a particular way the role of psalmody, of singing the psalms, and one has to bear in mind that this would have included a period of silence at the end of the psalm that would have evoked a contemplative moment, an opportunity for quiet self-offering. It's as if Cassian is emphasizing here what that kind of quiet self-offering is about. It's about reviving within us the yearning for or desire for heaven that can effectively counteract this spirit of negativity and despondency.